So Mark and Jana sent me some pictures of this beautiful yacht, a few years back, this beautiful yacht. I don't remember exactly, but it was a few years ago they sent them to me. Now, if I switch it, can you read the name on this yacht?
Never Enough.
Never Enough. When we live for the things of this world, we will never have enough. We always want more, just like this yacht owner. Jesus tells us that the things of this world have no eternal value, and you can't take the stuff of this world to heaven with you. You have to leave it here. So do I. This yacht will be handed off to someone someday, and someone else will enjoy it. Now, we may not have yachts. I suspect none of us in this room have a yacht like that. But the same is true for whatever we accumulate on earth. We will leave behind all that we possess on this earth. So Jesus tells us in Luke chapter 16, be spiritually smart about your worldly assets. Be spiritually smart about your worldly assets. And he tells a story in Luke 16, which is one of the most difficult of his parables to interpret. Listen to what Jesus says, Luke 16, verse 1. Now, he was also saying to the disciples, so now he's talking to the disciples and teaching them, there was a rich man who had a manager, and this manager, this steward, was reported to him as squandering his possessions. And he called him and said to him, what is this I hear about you? Give an accounting of your management, for you can no longer be manager. The manager said to himself, what shall I do since my master is taking the management away from me? I'm not strong enough to dig. I am ashamed to beg. I know what I shall do, so that when I am removed from the management, people will welcome me into their homes. And he summoned each one of his master's debtors, and he began saying to the first, how much do you owe my master? And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said to him, take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, and how much do you owe? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. He said to him, take your bill and write 80. And his master praised the unrighteous manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the sons of this age are more shrewd in relation to their own kind than the sons of light. So the lead character in this story is Slick Willie, a dishonest businessman. The owner suspects him of squandering his money, of wasting the owner's money. The Greek word is in a form that means the dishonest business manager was wasting it on an ongoing basis. He was continually wasting his master's resources, we assume, for his own personal benefit. The master asks for an audit, and Slick Willie knows he can't dig ditches, and he doesn't want to beg for a living. So he's thinking through everything, and the Greek implies that all of a sudden he says, I've got it! I've got it! And he comes up with his plan. And he concocts this plan to go to all that owe his master money, and he has them change their bills. He's going to use his master's money to buy favor with the network of people who will then become his safety net when he's inevitably fired by the master. Well, the master finds out about his plan, calls him in, and at this point, the disciples listening to the story are likely expecting Jesus to tell them how the master came up with a clever way to manage it all and how the dishonest guy got his just due. And Jesus doesn't do that. He has a surprise ending. The master praises this crooked businessman. And I suspect the disciples about this point started laughing at the surprise ending. They didn't see that one coming, and neither do we. The surprise ending is a puzzle to us too. In fact, as I said, this is one of the most difficult parables to interpret. Stories like these are called parables in the Bible, and some parables have allegorical elements to them, meaning that different facets of the story each refer to different matters, people, issues in the context of what Jesus is telling people. But this particular story is not allegorical, has no allegorical elements. You remember last week we did the parable of the prodigal son, and there are allegorical elements in that parable because the father represents God, the younger son represents the immoral people, and the older son represents the Pharisees. Those are allegorical elements. Well, there's no allegorical elements in this story at all. Here is a parable that teaches a single point. It is a story with one application. And the point is that we should be smart about using our worldly assets. We should be shrewd, that's the word, smart. Jesus doesn't praise the dishonest business manager for being dishonest. That's not the point. He praises him for being shrewd in how he used the opportunities he had. The man traded his present opportunities for future possibilities. That's what Jesus is praising. Christians, sons of light in this passage, Christians should be looking at life like this business manager. We should be smart about trading what we have here on earth for what we can gain in heaven. And Jesus lays out three ways we can apply this principle in the next few verses, because now he's going to take that story and apply it to Christians. And I'll put these applications in the form of questions so that we can explore what Jesus is teaching us here. Question number one, are you using dirty money for eternal goals? Are you using dirty money for eternal goals? Verse 9. Jesus said, "And I say to you," Jesus says, talking to the sons of light now, "make friends for yourselves by the means of the wealth of unrighteousness, so that when it fails, they will receive you into the eternal dwellings." I say to you, take the wealth of unrighteousness and make friends with it, so that they will receive you into heaven. Now, we hear a question like, are you using dirty money for eternal goals? And just like the disciples, our first response is to answer, no. Why would I do that? Christians, the sons of light, should never use dirty money for anything, let alone eternal goals. And once again, Jesus surprises us. He tells us we're dead wrong. The correct answer is yes. We should use dirty money for eternal goals. Now, I know that sounds really bad this morning in church, right? And that is precisely why this parable is so difficult to apply. Now, Jesus uses the same expression twice in the next few verses, once in verse 9, once in verse 11, and it is the phrase unrighteous mammon, or mammon of unrighteousness. The word mammon is an Aramaic word for wealth or money. The word for unrighteous is a word that means wickedness, injustice, or moral wrongdoing. Dirty money. Mammon of unrighteousness. So Jesus tells us to use dirty money to make friends on earth so we will be welcome in heaven. Use dirty money for eternal goals. Now, in order to understand this story, we have to back up and understand the cultural context of the story, what they would have understood as they were listening to Jesus tell this story. You see, the Jews were forbidden to charge interest on loans to other Jews. The Mosaic law forbid the use of interest. So you could loan somebody money, but you couldn't charge interest on it. It was immoral, according to the Mosaic law. So in their culture, there was no distinction between principal and interest like we have in our loans. What they did to get around this was that they wrote all of the interest into the principal so that they weren't charging interest. There's no such thing as principal and interest. So businessmen would hide the interest in the principal to get around the law. They simply included the interest in the principal on the books. So if someone borrowed 50 measures of oil, they would write it up as borrowing 100 measures of oil. So you now owe the whole amount, and there's no interest. That way they can keep the law and make lots of money. They avoided the Mosaic law by cooking the books. The dishonest business manager was simply fudging the books backward. He's simply fudging the books to reflect the true debt without the immoral interest that was written into the debt. Now, these were large debts. The 100 measures of oil were equal to the yield from 146 olive trees. The 100 measures of wheat were equal to the yield from 100 acres of land. And the debtor actually owed the amounts he was charged in the end. That's what he actually had borrowed. The rest of the money was immoral interest. And the manager is clever enough not to charge the same interest rate in reducing the books, because then that would be obvious. So he doesn't do the same with each account. But he's still working it back to what they actually owed in the first place. The owner's caught in a tough spot. Why? Because he can't go after the business manager who's doing this when he finds out about it. Because then everybody would know that he had made his money immorally. Because he was making money on all of these transactions. The whole operation had been against the Mosaic law in the first place. The business manager knew that, so did the owner. He was getting wealthy, too. So Jesus is making the point that all the money we earn on this earth is in some form dirty money. It comes from sources we don't control. We can see this in today's world when we take a look at corporations, which are global enterprises now. We have no idea how the resources of those conglomerates are making money. Our investments are tied up in companies that often make money in morally questionable ways. You work for companies like that. I'm not saying illegal, I'm saying morally questionable ways. They are within the law, but morally wrong. You have no control over that as an employee. You work hard, but everything you earn has been tainted in some measure by the world in which we live. That's reality. All our income on this earth is unrighteous mammon. It's dirty money to some extent. So Jesus tells us to be smart about using the dirty money we accumulate for eternal goals. And he talks about making friends with our resources so they will receive us into the eternal dwellings. Who are these friends? Well, the plural pronoun they is what we call a divine pronoun. It is in place of the name of God. It is a divine plural, they call it. Because the Jews would substitute the pronoun they for the name of God. You understand they didn't like to say the name of God. They thought it was too holy to say the name of God. So they would substitute the divine pronoun they, the divine plural they, for God. So he's essentially saying that God will welcome us into his kingdom. It may include friends, plural as well, who were won to Christ through our investments. The point is that we are to invest our wealth on this earth in heaven. So you work for an employer and you get paid for your work. Use the money for eternal goals. Our jobs on earth are a means of investment in heaven. And we're to be shrewd about it. We're to be smart about it. Use all the deductions you can get to make money. Take advantage of the opportunities you have to make money. Invest your profits in accounts that will pay a good return. Work hard for an employer so you get a good paycheck. Be smart about it. Don't be stupid. I've known some shrewd businessmen over the years who are very smart about making money. They know how to do that. Good. Do you? Am I doing a good job of making money here on this earth? You say, well, that's not my goal. But in one sense, it is. Be sharp. But, and here's a big but, remember this, you are not making money for yourself, right? You are making money for the kingdom. You're not making money to live in luxury. You're making money to invest in what God's doing in this world. So be smart about it, but realize your goal. That changes everything, because in the world, people are smart. They want to make lots of money for themselves. And Jesus says, we don't live to make money for ourselves. We live to work hard, make money for the kingdom, so that we can invest it in God's work. We can exchange earth's money for heaven's dividends. We can take it with us only by reinvesting it in heaven. Paying it forward is the term we often hear today. You can take what you have here on earth and pay it forward by investing it in the kingdom. So we have to know when we have enough for life on this earth. When do you have enough? That's always a question, isn't it? When do you have enough? And then you take the profits and you invest them in heaven. We lay up our treasures in heaven, Jesus says, with what we make on earth. Be smart, my friends, with how you manage your money. Are you using dirty money for eternal goals? Second question, are you faithful with earth's stuff, so you are fit for heaven's trust? Are you faithful with earth's stuff so you are fit for heaven's trust? Verse 10, he who is faithful in a very little thing is faithful also in much, and he who is unrighteous in a very little thing is unrighteous also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the use of dirty money, the use of unrighteous wealth, who will entrust the true riches to you? And if you have not been faithful in the use of that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? All right, we've all heard the principle, faithful in little, you will be faithful in much. Jesus taught it. It's very true. It's a good general principle to live by. If we are faithful in small things, then he'll give us big things, and we will be faithful in those big tasks. When I'm given a seemingly unimportant task, then I have to be faithful that with that. When I was in seminary and I was a custodian and cleaning out ashtrays every night, I needed to be faithful to be the best ashtray cleaner-outer I could be. Because you have to be faithful in the task you're given, the little things, so that you can be used in the big things. General principle. Many Christians, though, stop at that general principle and miss Jesus' point. Jesus is still talking specifically about money here. Verses 10 through 12 are a unit of thought. And he goes back to his dirty money issue in verse 11. He takes the faithfulness principle and he applies it to dirty money. If you do a good job managing the wealth of this world, then God will entrust you with true riches. The true riches are heavenly riches. Heavenly riches, what are those? They are things that last in eternity. They're the care of souls, evangelism, missions, leadership in the local church, teaching Sunday school classes. Those are investments in eternity. Because those are the things that last forever in heaven. And Jesus goes on to say, if you manage the money of others well, then God will give you your own responsibilities to manage. But if you don't manage the money of others well, then why should God entrust you with anything to do for Him? If you don't do a good job on your job, why should God trust you to do a good job on His job? God's not stupid. He's looking for people who do a good job. And what you're doing tomorrow and this week is your test. Whether God can use you for His stuff. Whether He can trust you with something more important, namely kingdom stuff. The proof we will be trustworthy spiritual leaders is found in how we manage material resources. It's a sad thing, but many, many Christian leaders fall terribly short here. We fail to manage our resources, our money, well. Maybe we don't pay our bills, or we don't invest wisely with what God gives us. We work at the job, but, you know, the owner really can't trust us to do a good job, to do it well. We're wasteful or we're careless because it doesn't matter to us. We think it's stuff of this world. And Jesus tells us that such little responsibilities are tests that God uses to determine whether to entrust us with spiritual responsibilities, responsibilities in the kingdom. You know, God doesn't care about your money. God's got plenty of money. He doesn't need your money or my money. What He cares about is His kingdom and having people who invest in His kingdom. That's what He's looking for. Managing a $1 million account is small potatoes to God compared to the souls of humans that He's trying to reach. The big responsibilities to God are the spiritual responsibilities. So one very important test of spiritual leadership, whether God can trust you with His kingdom work, one very important test is, how do you manage the little stuff? That $1 million account you've got to manage. That's little stuff. Manage it well. Do your job well, and God says, great, I've got somebody who will do a good job in my kingdom work too. So are you trustworthy in your job? God will hire you for His kingdom work. He will entrust you with spiritual responsibilities based on how you handle your worldly ones. We are stewards of our money. By the way, the word for this business manager is steward. That's the word. Somebody who manages a household well is a steward. We are stewards of our money. God is the owner of all we have. You don't own it. I don't own a bit of it. We manage it for God. Everyone knows that a mailman has one job, deliver the mail. Apparently, a Brooklyn mailman spent a decade avoiding his job by intentionally hoarding over 40,000 pieces of mail over a 10-year period. If you lived in Flatbush in Brooklyn and you didn't get your mail from 2005 to 2014, it may have been because this guy had it in his house. Joseph Brucato admitted hiding over a ton of mail, 2,500 pounds of mail, as it was filed in the Brooklyn federal court when they brought charges against him. A postal supervisor had become kind of suspicious when they saw in his car a lot of mail piled up in the back seat that was undelivered. So they began to press him, and eventually he admitted to hoarding first-class priority and regular mail headed for Brooklyn businesses and residents. It took five postal agents 5 hours just to remove the massive stash of stolen letters and bills. The mail doesn't belong to the mailman. And God's gifts don't belong to you. The mailman's job is to carry them out, to give them away. And our job is the same. Jesus talks a lot about money in the Gospels, because money is a great test of our spiritual lives, of our spirituality. Our worldly wealth will go somewhere. We can't keep it. We will pass it on. Everything will have to go to someone else. So we can either pass it on to God, or we can pass it on to somebody else to use. So we are like travelers staying in a hotel. Martin Luther, the reformer, used this analogy. It's like staying in a hotel. You go to the hotel, you have a wonderful room, you have a wonderful dinner, you have all of this. You enjoy the food, you enjoy all the amenities. But you know something, you know the room doesn't belong to you. It's not yours. It belongs to the host. We just use it. So Luther said, it is the same with our money and our resources. We use it to nourish and feed our families. We enjoy God's blessing. It's wonderful to stay in that hotel room, but we don't own it. We are on a journey to heaven, so we keep the destination in mind at all times. Question number three. Are you a company person or a kingdom person? Are you a company person or a kingdom person? Verse 13. No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth, mammon. Perhaps you've heard the expression, he's a company man. We mean by that, he, she is devoted to the company. They drank the Kool-Aid. They live for the company. They devoted themselves to it. Well, Christians cannot be company men and women, because we are kingdom men and women. We owe our loyalty to the kingdom of God, not to the company you work for. The company cannot mean more to you or me than the kingdom. or we're in trouble. And by the way, the same is true for our country. Patriotism can be very dangerous if we love our country more than God. That is a major problem if it happens. If we love America more than we love God, we've lost our priorities, because you cannot serve two masters. So we must be devoted to the kingdom. We, if you want to put it this way, we work for heaven's company. That's fine. But it's still the kingdom that we work for. And we must be kingdom people. And by the way, we are joined with kingdom people all over this world. In Africa, South America, Asia, Europe. There are kingdom people all over this world. They are part of our same heavenly company that we work for. So Jesus says it is impossible to serve two masters. You can't do it. And he uses hyperbole here. We've seen this hyperbole before, this exaggeration, to make a point as he contrasts hate and love. He's not saying that we literally hate one and love another. He is drawing a contrast between our loyalties. We cannot be loyal to two masters. We will serve one or the other, because inevitably a clash will come between the competing loyalties in life. We will have to make a choice, and it will be as if we loved one and hated another. The contrast will be so great when we have to make that choice. So we cannot serve God and money. We have to make a choice. And God sometimes forces us to make that choice, doesn't he? He brings into our lives the clash. He will use our circumstances to make us choose between following him and following our material goals. Now remember the definition of a disciple. A disciple is a fully devoted follower of Christ. Fully devoted. That means that God's goals take priority in our lives. We cannot be fully devoted to Christ and fully devoted to the accumulation of wealth. It is impossible. Can't be done. Or pleasure or any other goal that you might have or I might have. But we sure try, don't we? We sure try to have it both ways. Now, don't get me wrong. It is certainly true that we have to work to accumulate what is needed to provide for our families, our children, pay our bills, do the things that we are responsible to manage properly in this world, to care for those that we are responsible to care for. Christ understands all of that. But the problem is that we slip into serving money more than God so easily in life. We all can do it. I can do it. And we become so good at it that we rationalize so well what we're doing, as if we're serving God in doing this. I hear people say things like, I'm working hard now so I can do mission trips later. Really? I have to build up my investments now so in retirement I can serve God. Really? No, it doesn't work that way. You're not guaranteed tomorrow. You only have today. I only have today. We're either living for God today or we're living for our stuff today. That's all we've got. We can't serve God and money at the same time. You might not have tomorrow. You might not have retirement, and neither might I. We only have today. The sad truth is that the day for serving God, if we're doing it that way, may never come. Every day we are either serving God or we are serving stuff. That's an everyday choice. What drives our lives will either be God or materialism. And we have to evaluate that choice every day with what we are doing and how we are living. You have to do that on your job, with your families. The richest 80 people on earth are now as wealthy as the world's 3.5 billion poorest people. Now, I came across this statistic. I got to repeat it because it's mind-boggling to me. The richest 80 people on the whole earth are equal to the world's 3.5 billion poorest people in terms of the amount of wealth they have. That's a study done in 2015, so it's 2 years old now. Might be worse today. Take, for example, Larry Ellison, the third-ranking deep pocket on the 2015 Forbes list. Ellison just stepped down then in 2015 as the CEO of the Oracle business software conglomerate. His net worth, $50 billion. What does he do with all those billions of dollars? You probably, like me, you can't even fathom $50 billion, but what does he do with all those billions of dollars? Well, he collects estates around the world. He had 15 estates around the world in 2015, and he likes yachts. Something about yachts are great when you have lots of money. So he had two extremely big ones. Each yacht was a half a football field in length, and he had two of them. But he also liked to play basketball. It was a passion of his to play basketball, and he wanted to play basketball on his yachts. But there's a problem with playing basketball on a yacht. The ball bounces, and it goes over the edge and into the water, and you lose a lot of basketballs that way. So he had a powerboat that followed his yacht, and the sole purpose of the powerboat was to pick up the basketballs for him so that he could play basketball on his yacht. Well, you know, it's a little hard to imagine that kind of lifestyle, really. But the truth is that in principle, we're not much different than the multi-billionaires in this world. We may not have billions of dollars, but how we spend our money reveals where our hearts are and what's really important and what we value and what we love. We show what we treasure, Jesus says, with our wallets. And the truth is that everyone in this room is wealthier than lots and lots of people in this world. We've got it good. When I was in Morocco, I met a young Christian guy. He made leather goods, and I bought some of his leather goods, which I still have today. I gave some to my daughters, kept some. He lived and worked in this little small room. It was probably smaller than my bedroom. And I don't have a big house, believe me. Smaller than my bedroom, and his workshop was downstairs, and up in a loft he had his bedroom, the place where he lived. But this guy, he had very little, but he was so full of joy. He was laughing, talking, and he was talking about how he lived for his King Jesus. In Morocco, all of the businessmen, you know, because it's a closed country to Christianity, had images of the King of Morocco on their wall. Actually, it was required that you put a picture of the King of Morocco on your business wall. You know what he had on his business wall? A picture of Jesus. He's my king. And he took a lot of flack. And he lost a lot of business. But he would take what he had and he would give it to the Lord's work. And he was full of joy. And he was very happy. And he jokingly laughed with me that it's interesting. He said that God has blessed you in America with way more than I've got. You're all rich compared to me. Be nice if God threw a little riches my way, he would say. And then he would just laugh. You know what? He was absolutely right. Absolutely right. We are rich by comparison. The question is, how are we using it for him? God doesn't begrudge giving you his gifts. What he wants you to do is use them for his kingdom. In J.R. Tolkien's lesser-known short story, he wrote The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. The short story that he wrote was called Smith of Wootton Major. Tolkien has a profound look at spiritual gifts, God-given talents. There's a young boy named Smith Smithson who receives a rare gift at his village's celebration, a piece of cake, and it contains a single silver star. As Smith wears the star on his forehead, it shines with a light, and it allows him to be transported to magical lands and possess special powers and have wonderful privileges and extraordinary experiences. Alf, the master cook and baker of the cake, starts walking beside Smith one day as he is coming back from one of his magical travels. Unknown to Smith, Alf is actually the king of the country, the land, and he is the one who chose Smith to have the silver star in the first place. As they near Smith's home, Alf, the king, says, "Do you not think, Master Smith, that it is time for you to give this thing, this magic silver star, up to someone else?" Smith replies, "What is that to you, Master Cook? And why should I do so? Isn't it mine? It came to me. And may a man not keep things that come to him? So at least as a remembrance, it's mine." The king says, "Some things, some are given as gifts and given for remembrance, but others are not so given. They cannot belong to a man forever, nor be treasured as heirlooms. They are lent. You have not thought, perhaps, that someone else might need this thing, but it is so, and time is pressing." Friends, we are conduits of God's grace. That's all we are. And someone else has needs. And time is pressing. Let's be spiritually smart about our worldly assets. Father, it's easy to get caught up in what we have and what we want to have, and pursuing our goals here on this earth. And we praise you and we thank you for the wonderful gifts that you give to us, for we are truly blessed. Help us to realize that these gifts you give are for us to use for you. And help us to be wise enough to work hard, to be faithful, and to use the gifts for your kingdom. In Jesus' name, amen.